Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Recovery Talk.
So today, I wanted to talk about the messy world of eating disorder recovery coaching.
Okay, not really. It's not that messy, but there are some messes that should probably be worth discussing. And I feel like that is a bit my responsibility as a coach to talk about things going on in my own field. But more than anything, the aim of this episode is so that you, if you are someone who is maybe looking to work with a coach or also therapist, a lot of this would apply to therapists as well, even though it's a bit more coaching specific because that's my field. Yeah, so if you're looking to work with a coach, you can be a bit aware of what are some potential green flags and what are some potential red flags in a coach. Because I hear a lot of people who contact me and they have had a very bad experience. Don't get me wrong, this is not exclusive to coaches. I think the most common thing people get in touch with me about when it comes to healthcare professionals, the thing I hear from my own clients is that they've had, for example, a dismissive GP that is like, oh, what is eating disorders and doesn't know anything. Or someone who has a dietitian who's just prescribed them like a ridiculously low meal plan, or their team giving them a very low goal number, BMI, for weight restoration. So these things I would say are probably more common. But I'm not a GP. I'm not a dietitian. So yeah, I can talk about these things, but I will talk about it from a more of an outside perspective. So if you are looking into coaching, maybe this can be of help, or maybe you just want to know what on earth is going on in the world of coaching. So when I started out as an eating disorder recovery coach quite a few years ago now, it was largely a very unknown field. But in the last few years, there's been a significant uptick in eating disorder recovery coaches. So there's been a bit of an influx in people starting this career path. And I believe that this is a bit of a two-edged sword, right? On one hand, eating disorder recovery coaches are so, so needed. And if you have a good coach, that can make a world's difference in your recovery. On the other hand, coach is not a protected title. And because it's not a protected title, that means that there isn't necessarily a specific set of ethics that we have to follow, a specific amount of training we need, a specific set of like guidelines and rules. We can't necessarily lose our license because we are unlicensed healthcare professionals. And a lot of the certifications that you can get as a coach are so easy to get. I keep getting adverts about do a $7 NLP practitioner course. You probably hear this a lot if you are in the world of coaching. NLP practitioner stands for neuro-linguistic practitioner. So it can be something where someone can get a very quick qualification without not necessarily having the correct experience, the correct people skills, the correct support, the correct guidance, etc., etc., to be able to offer what they're offering. So this has unfortunately brought out more than a few bad apples, which is so sad because it harms the reputation of the field as whole. It makes eating disorder recovery coaching looks like a bit of a joke or like a bit unserious or dodgy. But more importantly than the fact that it can harm the field or reputation of other coaches is that it can harm clients, the exact clients that we are hired to help. So as mentioned, this episode is intended for you if you are a potential coaching client, just to be able to identify those bad apples, or if you're just someone who's a bit curious what's going on and want to know a bit more about this, and also help you, again, look for signs that someone is a good coach, maybe find someone that you're compatible with. So I also probably said that even though this is specifically about coaches, some would apply to therapists and other mental health professionals. I do want to add that what is a red or green flag, or what is perceived as a red or green flag, it would vary a bit from person to person. And as a coach myself, of course, I come from this not in a completely like neutral, unbiased way. Of course, I have my own ideas and biases about eating disorder recovery coaching and what I believe is the better way to do things. And I also believe there is room for disagreements. There are room for different viewpoints. Nevertheless, at least some of the red flags that I'm about to discuss should not really be controversial or not even too subjective, as some of them actually relate to basic medical ethics and basic legal things, like basic legalities. These are not necessarily things that you can disagree with. It's in the law. Or, I mean, I guess you can disagree with the law, but anyways. So let's get started with what coaching actually is and also a bit what it isn't. So very, very broadly speaking, coaching is where a person, which we would call the coach, who has some form of experience and slash or some training in a specific area supports someone. That someone we would call the coachee, or I would often instead just call them the client. In the context of eating disorder recovery coaching, this would mean person who has experience and slash or training in eating disorder recovery, offering support to someone in eating disorder recovery. And I know you may think, oh, that sounds a bit like therapy. And I get that. And yes, coaching has a lot of similarities to therapy, but it's not quite the same. So unlike quote-unquote typical therapy, the support that is offered in coaching tends to be a bit more oriented around specific goals and goal setting, and it's also more set in the here and now rather than in the past. So we're focusing less on what happened to you in the past, instead we're focusing on, okay, where are you at right now? Of course, a skilled coach could also help you identify unhelpful beliefs and patterns that you may have, and of course, a lot of those would be rooted in the past, but it would be done with the aim of breaking the beliefs and patterns and to get into action. So coaching is very much action-oriented. This can be quite refreshing for a lot of people who are in eating disorder treatment, where all of the focus is talking about childhood trauma and there's very little action. Coaching is great when you're looking to get shit done rather than just talking about shit that happened. But of course, talking is part of coaching as well. We will talk about difficult things that have happened. There's no rules that we can't do that. But the overall focus is more on setting goals in the here and now, getting you towards where you want to be. When it comes to eating disorder recovery, coaching tends to work great in conjunction with other forms of support and treatment. And coaches are, or at least should, be willing to work part as your wider team. Coaching can also be appropriate for someone who maybe have done some work already, they are in a more stable place, for example, their intake is stable, they are quote-unquote weight restored, there's no like acute high-risk behaviors. Sometimes these people would be deemed recovered by their team and kind of sent off on their own, but they actually need some extra support, they need that extra push to full freedom. A good coach is someone who will guide you without babying you or without policing you, and also someone who knows where and when to be firm or to push. And this is a skill we learn through consistently doing the coaching. What is very important is that you should feel empowered in yourself rather than overly dependent on your coach. Because overall, we help you help yourself. So some examples of typical things a recovery coach would work on with their client would be helping people identify and let go of food rules and restrictions, maybe those that are a bit sneaky and maybe their wider team haven't necessarily picked up on. Also encouraging and helping people let their bodies find their set point weight range rather than holding on to this random quote unquote minimum healthy weight. And also helping people heal relationship with movement. So these are more the things that we are working on as coaches. Coaches are not trained medical professionals. And if they are, that's not a role they will be in as a coach unless otherwise stated or they're offering a combined approach. So for example, a coach can have any kind of background. Someone can be a doctor and a coach, but if they are coaching, they are not necessarily going to go and do your blood samples. But again, exceptions exist here because there are people who may be offering a combined approach. For example, maybe someone is a dietitian and a coach, so they're offering maybe nutrition coaching, so they're offering to maybe do your meal plan, create a meal plan for you, and also coaching you in following through on that. But this is kind of, this varies from person to person, but as a general rule, a coach will stick to coaching. So as coaches, we can't prescribe you meal plans, we can't do your medical checkups, we are not there to heal your childhood trauma. Of course, as coaches, we can discuss your intake, we can set food-related goals, for example, adding fear foods. We can do these things, but we can't be like, we are prescribing you this meal plan. And also, even though we can't, you know, quote-unquote, treat you medically, we can offer some psychoeducation, we can offer you some guidance, some support. And even though we can't necessarily heal your childhood trauma, it is a supportive space where things from the past may come up. That's fine, that's just the case in any kind of relational safe space. And this actually takes me to the first red flag that I would like to discuss that unfortunately is seen in some coaches. Again, not all, but it is something that happens and it's often a thing that tends to go quite wrong. And that is when a coach is constantly overstepping their role. As I mentioned, the role of a coach is coaching. Sure, coaches, we are very versatile. We often do a bit of everything as part of coaching because coaching in itself is versatile. But there is a limit to this. Unfortunately, I've seen cases where coaches are embarking straight into arenas where they are not trained and where another medical professional should have taken over the stick. And this can end up putting the coach at risk because that could be a medical liability issue. But also, most importantly, it can end up putting the client at risk of harm. So I want to mention some examples of this that unfortunately does happen. So one is a coach without any appropriate training or very, very minimal training who say that they offer trauma work or like trauma healing from childhood for someone with, for example, PTSD and end up risking re-traumatizing the person. Another example could be a coach that has no appropriate nutritional qualifications who is putting it on themselves to prescribe meal plans to someone in early recovery or someone who is undernourished and slash or underweight and then potentially putting them at risk of refeeding syndrome. Like I said, very rough nutritional guidance can of course be part of coaching. Of course, we can state the obvious like, hey, yeah, you need to increase your intake. Yeah, actually, you do need fats. We can say these things, but prescribing meal plan is a whole different arena and that's better left to dietitians. Instead, as coaches, we can collaborate with dietitians. I do this quite a lot and I find that dietitians, they tend to be very, very open-minded and willing to work with me. So for example, maybe I would have a client that wants to work on their fear foods and want to implement this in the meal plan, then actually working with the dietitian on doing this can be very helpful. Even though, of course, you don't need anyone's approval to have the goddamn fear foods, right? Another red flag is a coach that is diagnosing their client with various mental or physical health conditions, sometimes very vague, unspecific conditions that are not medically knowledge, or conditions that would actually require further medical testing to be confirmed. Affirming someone's own suspicions and guiding them in the right direction to help manage certain symptoms, of course that is okay. So for example, you can work with someone's anxiety without saying, oh no, you need to go to your doctor and be diagnosed with anxiety. That's not what I'm talking about here. And same goes with eating disorders. Like the majority of people with eating disorders don't have an official diagnosis. They still have an eating disorder. And I also want to acknowledge that the healthcare system is not always great for people with chronic illness. So if you, for example, are a coach and a client comes to you with a condition that's often hard to identify, hard to diagnose from doctors and often invalidated, such as, for example, chronic fatigue syndrome, you shouldn't necessarily be like, no, you don't have that, go away. You can affirm, but it is important not to take that diagnostic role. And what I am mostly referring to here is coaches, especially like health coaches, who are quote unquote diagnosing their clients with everything from like leaky gut, candida overgrowth, like all of these kind of conditions that aren't necessarily fully medically acknowledged. And if they are, they can't diagnose them without taking a very close look at you. And this can harm the client because suddenly this health coach has diagnosed them with a million different intolerances and health conditions that they now need to manage and then they fall into a deep hole of further restriction. This is unfortunately a little bit too common, especially amongst health coaches. Again, there are amazing coaches in any field. I'm sure there are amazing health coaches who would never do anything like this, but this is something I've seen a lot. I've had people come to me and they've gotten all kinds of diagnoses from people absolutely not qualified to give them that diagnosis. But I do understand it is a nuanced arena, especially because certain conditions and also certain patients groups are often, you know, disbelieved, minimized by healthcare professionals. So another red flag that I do see a little bit more than I should is coaches making extravagant promises and engaging in very dodgy sales tactics. So I don't necessarily believe this always comes from a bad place. I instead believe it comes from misinformation about how to market yourself as a coach in the world of eating disorder recovery coaching. When someone starts out as a coach, they will often seek out articles, courses, programs, etc., on how to market themselves. And the problem is that this content is usually more generalized. It's more about marketing and coaching as a whole rather than being specific to eating disorder recovery coaching. And the marketing approach that works if you are a coach in, let's say, real estate is going to be very different to the approach that works if you're a coach in something more sensitive, such as mental health, eating disorder recovery coaching. So these coaches may say things such as satisfaction, 100% guaranteed. This will absolutely solve your issues. Money back if not. And this tactic can be fine if you are maybe someone coming to repair my roof, right? currently have a leakage in my roof, and you know what? I would be very happy if the person repairing says, yeah, I will definitely fix your leakage, and if not, you get your money back or I'll come and, you know, make up for it. That's good and fine when it's something a little bit more predictable, like fixing a roof. And also, if you are a coach in real estate or business or something a little bit less sensitive, I don't necessarily think these having something like a money back guarantee or guaranteed success is always bad. But working with a very vulnerable audience through going through something extremely hard, possibly one of the hardest things in their entire life, no, it's not the way to go. Truth is, not even the best coach in the world can guarantee full recovery. And you know what? Even the best coach in the world will have clients where, for whatever reason, it just doesn't quite work out. And the client is better off with maybe a different practitioner, different coach, or just a completely different approach. That's okay. Coaching is collaborative. It requires effort from both sides, and it requires a strong foundation between the coach and the coachee. And you can't always guarantee that, because you are not a broken car going into our magical garage for fixing. Again, that puts the dynamic that we are there to repair you, to put a magic spell on you, and you're just there as like a passive, passive participants, which just goes completely against what coaching is. Please don't get me wrong on this. As coaches, of course we have to promote ourselves. Of course we have to promote the work that we're doing. I do that all the time. That is super important. There's no shame in that. And thinking myself, if I was a potential client, I was looking for a resource, I would quite like to know the resources there to begin with. I would quite like to know, oh yeah, you're offering, for example, a course or a program or one-on-one or an ebook. I would like to know that. So there's nothing shameful in, you know, putting yourself out there and saying what you got to offer. But as coaches, we should be humble in acknowledging that we are not a fit for everyone. We should set realistic expectations with clients about what coaching actually is. And we should never push people into making a financial, emotional, or practical commitment they are not ready for or able to follow through on. And this takes me over to my next point, actually, which is a potential red flag in a coach could be someone whose fees are extremely high or extremely low. Okay, so this one is incredibly nuanced. It's not an immediate red flag, but it's something that maybe would require a bit further attention. When it comes to coaching fees, yes, there is a range, and someone being in the lower end of that range or the higher end of that range, that's just expected. That's just how it works, right? That's how it works with any kind of service. If you go to a therapist, it's always going to be a range of different fees. Heck, even if you're getting your roof repaired, there's going to be a range. And lower fee also don't necessarily always mean that someone is really bad, and higher fee does not always mean that someone is really good. But a fee that is very extreme, especially if combined with extreme sales tactics, making it seem like if you're investing this, I can guarantee you X, Y, Z when you're working with something like eating disorder recovery, that is the red flag. I think someone quietly charging a high fee is not always necessarily a red flag. It could just be that they have a high volume of interest, very limited spaces. Maybe they offer a lot of work into each client. So it's not always an immediate no. But when someone is offering, let's say it's like thousands and thousands, and you have to pay that up front and maybe commit to a certain amount of time and giving you very big promises about what's going to happen, red flag. For example, I saw someone once who was marketing to parents and basically trying to convince parents to pay her, I think it was like thousands and thousands up front to help rescue their child. And when they were like, I don't know about this, she would say, how much money is your child's life worth, right? Absolutely disgusting behavior. So now to the low fee. So low fee is not always an immediate red flag either, but I would say if someone's fee is extremely low, it can mean a few different things. First of all, it can mean that they have just gotten started. And you know what? That's not always a bad thing. And also, just getting started can mean so many different things for a coach. A coach can technically just gotten started, but they may have extensive experience in, for example, mental health care. Or they may have gone through very extensive coaching training rather than just doing like a one-day NLP course. But it can also mean that this is maybe someone who doesn't have a lot of clients, or if they do, the clients may have one session and never come again, and therefore they are quite desperate for more clients, and therefore the fee is just very, very, very low. Again, not talking about someone who charges a bit in the lower end, talking about just like very, very low fees. What it can also mean, and This one may some disagree with me on, but it can also mean someone who's not quite confident in their abilities. So I mentioned the one above, the one first, where someone is like extremely overcharging and just way too cocky and thinking that they're like a rescuer and saver and they can just fix people. Like, that's not great. But you would also want someone who has some level of faith in their skills and abilities and know their worth. Just because very often when you are in eating disorder recovery, these are qualities that you would work towards. A lot of times people in eating disorder recovery, they may have low self-worth, not really believe in themselves. And it would be a little bit awkward if the coach that's supposed to help you towards that don't do that themselves. But then again, a lower fee can also just mean someone may have sliding scale spots, or as I said, someone who may have just gotten started, but they're actually incredibly good, incredibly like experienced in other ways. So it's not necessarily an immediate red flag. But extremely high fees combined with very, very aggressive marketing and sale tactics and very aggressive like promises, I would say is a red flag. So another red flag to look out for would be someone who's taking on every single client. So you may have heard the expression, a friend to all is a friend to none. And there is a little bit of truth to it when it comes to this. So of course, as coaches, we hate turning people away. And we also, so we'll have times where we would take on a client only to realize later that, okay, maybe this person was not in the right space. Like that does happen even to the best of coaches. But a coach that does no kind of check-in before taking you on, no kind of requirements or no kind of, for example, requirements for other forms of medical support, zero, and just claims that they are fit for everyone, that is a coach that's best avoided. First of all, it suggests someone who has just dodgy ethics in terms of how they work. It also suggests it could be someone that is just incredibly desperate for clients. But a very important part of being a coach is you have to decline clients, even if it will cause you a loss of income. You have to decline a client who is not in the right space for coaching, whether it's medically, whether it's just mentally, they need a different kind of support. It's a part of what we're doing. We have to decline some people, even though it's not always fun for us or for the client. Coaching, as I said, does not replace medical treatment for an eating disorder. And a person who's at acute risk due to their mental or their physical health would require more extensive support than what coaching can offer. In these cases, coaching can potentially be a supplemental tool in collaboration with the wider team, but it shouldn't be the first line and only type of treatment. So one way that this can manifest, which is in a bit more of a subtle way, very often with the best of intentions, is well-meaning so-called weight neutral coaches who have internalized this view of, okay, not about weight, not about weight, not about weight, be my bullshit, which is true. But they think that this means, okay, I won't even investigate if the client I'm about to take on is severely underweight and how that might affect their current acute health risks. Yes, sometimes the weight will kind of sort itself out as someone is, you know, letting more go and going through coaching and are able to be more flexible. But there are also times with eating disorders, especially if someone is quite underweight, where we have to be very, very intentional about pushing up the weight and where the whole, oh, just be free around food, don't necessarily create weight restoration. So another red flag, and this kind of ties into a bit to what I said, would be discouraging medical treatment. This is a tricky one because the field of Western healthcare and psychiatry has its flaws and limitations, especially in regards to eating disorders. And that is just part why there are eating disorder recovery coaches to begin with, right? Because the field of eating disorder treatment is quite imperfect. A lot of outdated stuff going on there. And unfortunately, the majority of people that I talk with, they have had bad experiences with traditional healthcare and treatment. More so than people who had bad experiences with coaches, just putting that out there. And there absolutely are cases where someone is better sticking to a coach or sticking to other forms of care than what traditional healthcare can offer. But if a coach is encouraging their client to cut off all other forms of support just because that support is not 100% perfectly aligned with the coach approach, or discouraging medically vulnerable clients seeking out healthcare, that this is not great. This is not great. I believe that as coaches, we can acknowledge the flaws of traditional healthcare without reinforcing fears, without reinforcing conspiracy theories that can actually end up doing quite a lot of harm in our clients. And it's interesting because when it comes to conspiracy theories around healthcare, this can so often move over to orthorexia territory, right? There's a very fine line there. If you start going that line, big pharma can become big food pretty fast. So some examples of how this can show up could be a coach that is discouraging a client from seeing their GP for absolutely necessary medical follow-ups, for example, doing blood samples or for referrals to other practitioners. because that GP once made a triggering comment. Yes, encouraging someone to change their GP, yes, that's good and great, but just cutting off any kind of support that don't perfectly align, even when that support is necessary, is not good. Another way this can show up is a coach that's pushing their own beliefs about the healthcare system onto the client. So for example, discouraging vaccines, discouraging medications, or discouraging even seeking out a medical diagnosis because they quote unquote don't believe in diagnosis. Coaches are allowed to have their own beliefs, even though I do think there are certain beliefs that are probably not aligned with working with people with eating disorders. But it is important to know that you may have your views on things, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that is what would work for your client. It's totally fair to encourage swapping practitioners if practitioners aren't helpful. And there also are cases where we as coaches have to talk against ignorant doctors who are just plain out wrong. I've done this quite a few times in my career as a coach, and it happens. There are times where not standing up is just no. But I often like to encourage clients to use the variety of resources that are available to them, even if those resources are not 100% perfect. This especially goes to early recovery, where someone is in need for medical support outside of what something like coaching can offer. It is better to be supported imperfectly than not at all. And, you know, as the expression goes, don't throw the baby away with the bathwater. I will often have people who come to me who've had bad experiences with the healthcare system, and as a result, they don't want to go back, right? And it's super understandable, but I also think this is an area where I have to be very clear that I can't take over your doctor's role. If you are refusing to see your doctor, unfortunately, you can't see me, because I cannot take on someone who is acutely unwell with no medical support. I think this is something coaches need to be aware of. Another case where coaches have to not take on that savior role, like, oh, this person has been let down by the system, so I'm the only person who can save them, and risk a medical liability lawsuit. Another red flag to be mindful of is someone who breaches confidentiality. This goes with coaches and with therapists. So for example, maybe you said something in your session and suddenly the coach is saying to their followers, oh, I just had a client that said this. And you never consented to that. That's a red flag. There is nuance to this as well, because as coaches and therapists, we will very often say things such as, oh yeah, a lot of my clients, they have, for example, the unicorn syndrome. It's a very common fear. We talk about clients in like a generalized sense rather than talking about individual. That's fine. But if you feel like your coach is just mining you for content or will share emails or messages without your consent, you gotta run. Of course, if there is information that you've consented to sharing, maybe you left a testimonial, maybe you wanted to share your recovery experience with someone else, that's fine, but something to be a bit mindful of. And this is probably also because as coaches, most coaches, they're not trained in things like confidentiality, so it can very quickly be forgotten. And I think what's so important is to be aware that coaching, the role you have as a coach and client, is different than a role you have as just two friends talking and chilling. Of course, you want a coaching session to be very casual. I like to joke around with my clients. I like to, you know, not making it a super formal place and have a very casual dynamic. But at the end of the day, I am their coach. Okay, guys, so this was a lot of red flags, but I also want to share just a few green flags that people may be able to look out for when they are looking to get a coach. So green flag would be someone who is upfront about who they are, upfront about their training and background, upfront about what they offer and what they don't. Essentially, someone who's saying, this is me, this is what I do, this is what I can offer you, and if you want it, great, and if not, that's fine as well. Overall, someone where you notice that the coach is genuinely interested in finding out if you guys could be a fit and if coaching could be a good thing for you, rather than someone that is like trying to almost recruit you into coaching. Don't want someone who takes on everyone that walks into their door. Of course, a coach should always try their best to be like, okay, what can I offer you? How can I support you? But also someone where there is that interest in, is this compatible? Are we compatible? Would I be better off maybe referring you to another coach that may be more specialized in whatever you're going through? This is something that coaches do a lot, where we may get someone who approaches us and we're realizing, okay, I don't think this person would be a fit for me, so I'm going to refer them to this other coach I know. Another one would be someone where their pricing reflects very appropriately their experience, their skills, what they have to offer, just reasonable pricing. As I said, there is a range to this. Some may be in the lower end, some might be in the higher end, but that the pricing is not shocking, either shockingly low or shockingly high or exploitative. Also, a green flag is someone who has their own boundaries and also someone who respects your boundaries as well. Boundaries, I understand, is a bit of a buzzword, but it could be something like maybe you have something you don't want to discuss. And the coach, yeah, of course, the coach may encourage a bit like, okay, I noticed this is an area of resistance. Should we work around that? But also no one that would force you into talking about things that you don't want to talk about. Of course, there are exceptions here. There are times where we actually need to know. For example, like I go back to the weight thing, I would need to know if someone is severely, acutely underweight and medically vulnerable. You can't just be like, oh, I'm not comfortable discussing that, then I can't work with you. But maybe someone had something very difficult happening and they're like, you know what, I just don't feel comfortable discussing that right now. That's okay. And also a coach that has their own boundaries. I mean, self-disclosure is something we talk a lot about, and coaching is actually an area where self-disclosure is more common and can be used very productively. So in some forms of treatment, more like, for example, psychotherapy, there is more of like a blank canvas approach where the therapist will be very neutral, won't necessarily disclose much emotion or much about themselves. And this can be very helpful for some people. Some people really like that approach. Coaching tends to be a bit more, what can I say, a bit more relaxed. People will often have lived experience if they are eating disorder recovery coaches, and they may share a bit about their experience. But you also don't want a coach that is just oversharing everything going on in their personal life to a point where it feels a bit awkward. Self-disclosure is something that can be used in a very powerful way. It can be a sense of, I know that you're going through things right now, I've been there myself, it does get better. That can be incredibly nice to hear from someone. And also part why a lot of people are drawn to coaching is having someone who's been there themselves. But you also don't want a coach that is making coaching about them, right? Where all they do is talk about, oh my God, my partner said this and no. That's not coaching. Like that's complete swap of roles. You as a client are the person who's supposed to do that, not the coach. The overall green flag is a coach that has their own boundaries, that is able to use self-disclosure in a helpful way. Use self-disclosure in a way, but actually it helps you rather than getting the impression that they just love talking about themselves, right? Someone that uses their experience in a professional, appropriate way that helps you. I also want to add that a green flag in a coach is just that you guys get along and feel comfortable together. It can take some time for this to grow. You may find that it takes a bit of time for you to warm up to new people. That's okay. But there are times where someone can be an excellent coach, but they're just not a fit for you. Maybe it's just something about the way they work, their mannerism, their personality, or maybe their religious belief, maybe their politics, and you feel like, okay, I don't necessarily feel like this is someone that I'm compatible with. That's completely fine. It is completely okay to want to seek out a person, whether it's a therapist or coach, that has maybe certain shared lived experiences as you, same identity markers. If that's something that's important for you in that space, that's okay as well. And a good coach will accept and acknowledge this. And a good coach would also be able to admit that there are certain things and experiences they haven't had, instead of just trying to make it seem like, oh yeah, I get this because X, Y, Z. A good example here could be a coach that's in a smaller body working with a client in a bigger body. Of course, that you, if you're in a bigger body, you don't automatically have to have a coach in a bigger body. But it is very understandable if you feel like maybe you do want that. That's okay. Maybe you feel like that someone who understands your experience more. And it would not be great if your coach who's in a smaller body would be like, oh, I completely understand what you feel, when they're moving through the world in a completely different way than you. So a good coach would be humble enough to admit this. Another green flag would be a coach that knows their limitations, and a coach that is able to say, I don't know. A lot of times as coaches, we think that we need to know everything, but we don't. It's so much better to say, that's an interesting question. I'm not completely sure. I would have to check that out for you. I have to think a bit about it. And a coach that says, you know what you're going through right now might be a bit outside of my training, and I think you would be better off with someone else. So for example, maybe you have very, very significant trauma showing up, and you have a coach that's not necessarily trained in that. Rather than the coach thinking, okay, let's just try and sort this out, the coach then instead may say, you know what, I think that you would be a lot better if you could also maybe seek out a trauma therapist that could help you work through this, either instead of coaching or in addition to coaching. So I mentioned boundaries, and I just want to mention this again because there's another point I think is quite important. But when it comes to boundaries, this can also show up between sessions, right? I see a lot of new coaches that start out and they have like 24/7 WhatsApp support. And I understand as a client, this can feel really nice. But overall, what it can create is a sense of dependency on the coach. And then, of course, it becomes very hard to stop coaching because you become so dependent on that one person. Don't get me wrong, between session support is awesome. It's something I offer myself through email, and also something many coaches offer through WhatsApp, which is completely fine. But there also has to be a bit of a limit to it. You can't necessarily have a coach that is saying, I will respond immediately, no matter what, right? That is just suggests to me that that is a coach that has zero work and personal life boundaries, and a coach that is destined towards burnout, meaning it's not going to be a sustainable relationship. And again, think about it as a client, which kind of values do you want to work on within yourself? Which kind of things do you want to work on? And very often something people want to work on is having good boundaries, being able to say no. If your coach is not able to do that, how are they going to help you do that? So a coach that has okay boundaries about, for example, they're not going to say, oh yeah, call me in the middle of the night if you need to, right? And actually be like, you know what, you can reach out anytime, but I'll get back to you when I get back to you. I'll get back to you within my working hours. That's completely fine. Rather than allowing that dependency and savior mentality that I unfortunately so often see between coaches and clients. And I know it feels good in the moment as a client. And even as a coach, it can make the coach feel good and important, like they're doing something very important. But it just ends up backfiring. It's not sustainable. It's not healthy for anyone involved. And it's not something that is going to really create full lasting recovery. And that's what we want to work towards. So another green flag, and this one I will confess, this one may be a little bit based on my own bias and personal views and experiences and values. So you are okay to disagree with this. But I believe a green flag in a coach is someone that has a sense of originality, right? They are able to think their own thoughts. They don't just parrot what they hear other coaches say or do. They're not just copying everything without having any ideas on their own. Don't get me wrong. When it comes to eating disorder recovery coaching and just eating disorders in general, there's a bit of a limit to what we can talk about, right? There are a few things that just keep repeating over and over. For example, reactive hunger. It's not necessarily like a red flag if your coach is talking about reactive hunger because someone else did, because everyone who's a coach working with people with eating disorders are naturally going to talk about the one of the most common topics coming up. But if you notice your coach is just always does what everyone else does. It's just parroting what they heard in a podcast episode, what they read somewhere. There's no reflection. There's no like in-depth understanding of the topics. They just don't seem to have any original ideas. For example, another coach launches an ebook on a specific topic, and then the other coach does the exact same thing right after. Or their podcast episode is just always what someone else has released beforehand. Like, and it becomes not a one-off, because yes, our topics will overlap. There will be times where we make a post or do a podcast episode about something and someone else does the same thing. It's going to happen. But if it is a constant pattern, what that can tell you about a person is that this is someone who A, is not necessarily confident in their own skills, insights, and abilities, and is not necessarily B, able to understand the topics in depth. For example, they may talk about reactive hunger, but they're just repeating what someone else says. They don't, and if you actually ask them more, okay, can I ask you a bit more about reactive hunger? You notice that their knowledge is a bit like, how can I say, a bit like when I was in school and I would memorize for a task. Yes, I could memorize certain things and I could say certain things that I read, but there was not an in-depth understanding of it. It also tells me that this is someone who may not respect other people's copyright, respect other people's privacy. For example, I've had coaches who just straight out copy word by word what I've done and posted it. To me, that says to someone who just operates dodgy. And if they're operating dodgy in towards other coaches, how are they then going to be towards their clients? How do you know that this is someone who has good ethics and values? Again, is a person who is behaving this way someone that you would want to pay to be part of one of the most important things in your life? I think coaching is one of those areas where investing a bit more in someone who's good is probably going to give you a better return of investment. Also, if you're investing in someone who's good, you may also be able to end coaching earlier. So you may actually end up saving you money compared to someone where it's just not working out and you're spending session after session and it's been so long and there's no progress. A good coach should also be able to acknowledge when there hasn't been progress and then being like, okay, are we compatible moving forward? Or maybe you need a different approach, different practitioner, or maybe we can work out a way to turn things around rather than just keeping you like passively showing up to sessions. Nothing happened. But please don't take this as me thinking you should go for those coaches that are like charging thousands and thousands per month and saying, this is guaranteed, your investment guaranteed full recovery, because again, that's a red flag as well. But maybe don't just go for the first and cheapest coach that shows up without doing further research on them and without doing a consultation with them to get a bit of a feeling if they could fit for you. So lastly, I want to talk about something where people think are automatic red or green flags that I personally don't think are. So these are controversial. So I know some of you are going to be like, oh, Amalia, no, this is not it. I disagree. That's fine as well. So a first thing that I would say that people often assume is an immediate green flag, an immediate sign that someone knows their shit, is someone who has fancy websites, good social media following, lots of viral posts, maybe some viral TikToks, maybe they look very well put together. This is, of course, not a red flag, don't get me wrong, but it is not an immediate green flag. Just because someone has a large following on social media, has made some catchy TikToks, it doesn't really mean that much. Even someone having a big podcast doesn't necessarily mean that much. And I know I'm really not marketing myself well here. Of course, I like to believe that I'm doing my job appropriately, but me having a podcast with a lot of listeners, I don't believe that is what makes me good at my job, you know? Yes, it's an advantage. It allows me to practice a lot of the things that I'm doing in sessions, but please don't think that this is the only thing that makes me qualified for my job, or that if there's a coach that has a good podcast, immediately they will be a good coach, because it is two different roles. Someone can be killing it on social media, but they are just not great at coaching. And someone cannot even know what TikTok is and be the best coach you've ever had. For example, one of the coaches that work with me at Let's Recover, Luisa, she is not very active on social media. Like we're both like, okay, we should be more active on social media. Come on, let's do it. But we're just not really that active. We're working on it. But she is an amazing coach. I know that. I know that she has very happy clients. She's killing it at what she's doing. And she is operating in a way that is sustainable and ethical. Again, this is not me saying social media and being active there is a red flag, but I do think there are coaches who probably would be better off, instead of spending their time, you know, on dancing on TikTok, instead spending some of that time into continued education. So doing actually high quality accredited training, or reading books, or just really working on their own skills as coaches. But of course, you can do both. My point is that don't get fooled by someone having a large social media following or a lot of viral posts or likes and assume that this automatically makes them a good coach or a good therapist or a good doctor or dentist or whatsoever. We see this a lot in healthcare. Just for myself, back when I've been in that patient role, I think some of the best therapists that I've had in my youth were typically like older women who were about to retire, probably didn't really know how to use a smartphone, but damn, were they good at what they were doing. So another thing, and this is probably my most controversial opinion, and I know a lot of you are going to disagree with this, but I think something that people assume is an automatic red flag is someone not being quote unquote certified as a coach. And that unless someone has a specific certification, a specific coaching certification, or have done a specific coaching training, they should not practice and coach and they're immediately bad. So please, please let me rephrase. I do think that having some kind of background and training and coaching is very important, but it does not automatically make you a good coach. When I think about some of the best coaches I know, two that comes to mind actually are not trained in coaching, but they have tons of other experience and lived experience that make them really skilled at the job. Then when I think about some of the worst cases I've heard of, for example, I mentioned that person I was trying to basically financially blackmail parents to minors, by the way, minors, yes, red flag. That was someone who was a qualified certified coach, certified NLP level X practitioner. So some of the dodgiest coaches are the ones with qualifications, right? It doesn't always mean that someone is good. So here's the thing. When it comes to coaching qualifications, a lot of them, especially like NLP qualifications, are very, very easy to get and they're very, very cheap. Like I said, you can get it for $7 and do it in like, I don't know, you don't even need to do much and you just have that qualification, right? You can basically just buy it online. There are certain qualifications that have a bit more weight. So one example is the Carolyn Costin Institute, which is almost more like a university level training for eating disorder recovery coaches. I don't know that much about the training program, and I know that I'm pretty confident I have some disagreements with some of the things that they say or do, but overall, that qualification would of course hold more weight than someone having done a one-day, one-hour NLP thing that they bought for like a few dollars. Overall, a coaching qualification doesn't always mean that much because it can be acquired by everyone with no kind of entry requirements, no kind of exit requirement, no like, okay, hey, are you good enough to actually get your qualification here? Compared to something like, for example, being a doctor where you actually have to go to medical school and you have to pass certain requirements to be able to call yourself a doctor. I wanted to say this because I think a lot of times as clients, people get very swayed by someone having certified coach, right? You think, okay, that means you're safe, that means you're good. But as I said, it doesn't mean that much. It can be a green flag because there are certain coaching trainings that are really, really good that actually genuinely equip you with skills that you need. But one of my pet peeves is when coaches do the whole like holier than thou because a coach is not certified when they literally got the certification in 2 days. And that other coach that maybe didn't get that qualification may have been someone who has extensive experience in eating disorder recovery. Maybe they work in healthcare. Maybe they have been doing a lot of like patient guidance and support. Maybe they have been running support groups. Maybe they are researchers. Like, you never know. They can have so much other experience that can make them qualified to do coaching. And they may have picked up the coaching skills from a different place. Maybe they have done extensive reading about coaching. Maybe they have been working with another coach and they've been mentored to practice this skill. In that case, what will make them less qualified for you to work with them compared to someone who did like literally like spent maybe 3 hours on doing a course? I think a similar example here could be a sports coach, or for example, imagine the trainer of a football team. There is no like one place you go to learn to become a qualified or certified football coach. I mean, okay, maybe there is, but I don't know about that. Instead, you build up those skills through being in the field, through engaging with the field consistently. Maybe you have experienced yourself being a football player. This is very often you see with football teams. Their trainers are people who are former football players who just been in the field for so long. They picked up so much skill, so much knowledge. This is just the way it is when it comes to job professions that are not protected titles. Personally, I'm actually very much in favor for there being some kind of, some kind of certification or training or some kind of like registry for coaches and somewhere clients can go when their coach is, not acting as they should. Then again, I am a bit concerned that if this was suddenly implemented, a lot of coaches would have to take some time off work to be able to go through this licensing and certification. So I am a little bit concerned of how it may affect the field and also how it may exclude certain really good coaches who for whatsoever reason is unable to maybe do that on continued training, maybe can't afford it, may not have time. So I am... On the surface level, yes, I'm positive to there being more like, I wouldn't say gatekeeping, but I also can see how it can complicate things for the current client. It would be a disaster if they suddenly said, okay, you need to go to coaching school, officially acknowledged qualification from the government to be able to practice this. And then all of a sudden what happens to the client who are vulnerable and who need that support? Not great. Then again, individual coaches will often have organizations they are registered with. So for example, I have a master's degree in psychology, so I'm registered under British Psychological Society, which is an official organization. And there are a lot of coaches that are registered under, for example, the Coaching Federation, even though to be completely honest, I don't think they are very serious because I've tried to report a coach and other people have tried to report a coach. That was the one that was trying to blackmail parents and they didn't really do anything. So, or maybe they did, but I'm not aware, but I'm not sure how serious they are. But there are various organizations that a coach can be registered under, but I understand that there's not necessarily any, okay, how do we know that something is going to happen at the current, that the organization is going to take action if one of the coaches is acting irresponsibly? We don't really know that. But if you are a client who have been working with a coach that is acting against the law, that is acting in a way that is incredibly unethical, and you're kind of like, okay, I think I might have a case here, it could be worth going to whichever organization they are registered with, if there is anything about that on the website. This is also the benefit of working with a coach that is quote unquote certified. But the problem is that a lot of these certifications are so unserious that, as I said, they may not do anything or really mean much. But please also be aware, as a client, it is not illegal to be a bad coach. It is not illegal to be even an irresponsible coach. It is not illegal to not know or to be new in the game and not really have great coaching skills, right? I'm talking more about people who are actually engaging in things that are against the law. If your coach is just not that great, then it's better to just leave and take the lesson and know that, okay, what are some red flags that maybe I missed in this coach? What are maybe some things that I would want in my other coach? And again, whether or not someone is a bad or good coach is individual. I'm sure I've had clients who may not think Amalia was the best coach ever, right? That's completely fine. Because not everyone can be for everyone. And it could be that there are things that I'm doing that other people may find a giant red flag. For example, in my sessions, I prefer to be quite casual. You know, there's a relaxed atmosphere. The language is quite casual. I usually would be in comfortable clothing. Some people may look at me and think, wow, Amalia is actually really unprofessional. Or for example, using lived experience. For some people, that can be a red flag or something that's very unprofessional to do. Whereas for other people, that might be what drives them towards that practitioner in the first place. I also want to say, if you started working with a coach and you feel like it's not a fit, and you may have given it some time, you've given it some effort, you tried a few different things, and you just feel like, okay, this is probably not the person for me, please, you are so much better off seeking out a different type of care. Please don't be so concerned about hurting your coach's feelings. As coaches, we have clients who ended early with us for all kinds of different reasons. Lack of compatibility, time issues, wanting a bit of trying something different, finances. Like, it's part of our job. We don't expect everyone we work with to stick with us forever. And if your coach is almost guilting you into staying, that is a huge red flag. If I work with a client and that client is just not a great fit for me, I would so much rather that they find someone who is, rather than just sticking with me because they feel like they should or feel some kind of loyalty to me. And also, if you have a coach and you feel like, yeah, this is actually a lot of potential in this working relationship, but I feel like there are certain things my coach is doing that I find a little bit weird or uncomfortable, bring it up with your coach. I always tell my clients, help me help you. For example, if my clients prefer a certain type of communication style, I'm so happy to accommodate that. But I can't always read people's minds. A good coach should be open-minded to your suggestions, if it is suggestions that can make the coaching-coachee relationship better. A coach that is just like, my way or the highway, no, you're wrong because you're sick and I won't even listen to your suggestions, that's not good. Of course, a coach should call out the eating disorder. So if the eating disorder is always trying to like push and creep up and steer the relationship in a certain direction, a coach should call that out. But we should also be opening to listening to you. So for example, I often will give, me and the other Let's Recover coaches, we often actually give our clients very specific homeworks between sessions. And sometimes I give tasks that may have worked for a lot of clients, but maybe for that one client, they find that, okay, that specific task just wasn't that helpful for me. And then I would rather them tell me like, you know what, like I can see that this is a good task, but I think for me, I don't think this would be helpful. So maybe we could do something else instead. That's completely fine. And issues with your coach, maybe they said something that didn't sit right with you. Maybe there were misunderstandings. Maybe you feel like there's something that's unclear. Talk about it with your coach. A good coach should be open for that. Please don't feel like you have to please your coach and you have to sit there and all be happy-go-lucky when you're actually feeling quite sad, or be scared of even disclosing that you had a bad day because you're scared of disappointing your coach. That's not a dynamic that you would want in the person that's supposed to help you. So overall, if you are someone looking for a coach, try and think a bit, what is important for you in what you would want in a coach, right? Is it a specific approach that you would prefer? Would you prefer someone who is very bubbly and outgoing, or would you prefer someone who's a bit more quiet, reserved? Would you prefer someone who uses their lived experience a lot, or would you prefer someone who's more of a blank canvas? One of the most important things that I personally believe people should look at when they're looking into finding a new therapist or coach is what kind of a modality and an approach this person is trained in, and what those things actually mean, and why that matters so much for how the treatment is going to unfold. I believe the fact that people don't do this is often the root for a lot of frustration and resentment towards your therapist, because they're working in a way that was different from what you expected. So in the next episode, I will talk about this, talk about what all of these different CBT, FBT, ACT, what it even means, and why it is so, so, so important if you are someone looking for a new therapist or a new coach. But that would be for a future episode, because I am running out of time and this episode is way too long already. But yeah, I hope you enjoyed a bit of a niche topic, but niche topics is what we're doing over here. I hope this, if it can even just make one person make a better decision in terms of coaching, then my work here is done. And of course, I want to acknowledge again, I am biased here. Of course, I have certain views on coaching, and that view, of course, I believe that view is shaped by having a lot of experience in what I'm doing, spent a lot of time in this arena. So not necessarily an opinion that I just woke up with one day and I was like, yeah, this is what I think and feel. It does come from a place. But again, I think acknowledging bias is always important. Of course, I would naturally tend to recommend coaches that work in a similar way to me. Naturally, I would feel very comfortable if it was someone in my life who's struggling with an eating disorder. I would immediately recommend someone like, for example, my own coaches at Let's Recover, because I know them. I know what they're doing. I know that they are good. That's why they're here. That's why I wanted to work with them. But again, like I said, it's nothing works for everyone. And if you need a different approach, that's fine. So find something that works for you. It might take a bit of trial and error. Please don't let that discourage you and let you give up on recovery. Maybe you had one bad coaching experience and you're like, okay, well, that's it. No more coaching for me, right? Could be that you just needed someone else and that's okay. Or it could mean that the approach of coaching was maybe not what you needed. Maybe you needed something a little bit different. Please don't ever let a coach make you feel like you are faulty and wrong for the collaboration not working out. Yes, self-reflect, take accountability on the things on your end that didn't work out, but don't be so hard on yourself because like I said, it could be you just needed something different. Okay guys, very long episode, but yeah. That happens sometimes. Have an amazing day and week ahead, and I will see you next week.